programming here. We are no longer going to just have the pseudo experts talking to the radio.
Tonight, we're going to probe around.
How did
you get off?
Interesting note is the way that our city handles squatters. They respond with 80 policemen, helicopters, front-end loaders, backhoes, SWAT teams with machine guns to respond to about 10 peaceful squatters. And the media response has totally died off. There's no uproar to the martial law conditions that prevailed that day. But anyway, best wishes over the holidays and all the best on your address to the nation on the 1st of January 1991. Keep up the good work. Goodbye.
Hey, Bob. Blade Runners on City, 11:45, Sunday midnight, morning of 31st, I guess. This should be a Tai Chi meditation for you.
Bob, this is the electrified voice of Tom Rich. I have a little poem here to read. You know, Marshall talked about how the English had hurt the Irish into poetry and song. This was Marshall's way of describing the British establishment's continued strategy since the 14th century of dividing and conquering both Europe and the world. That's their strategy, and creating battles here and there in order to create the division. This is called A Parcel of Rogues in a Nation by Robert Burns. Farewell to us our Scottish fame, farewell our ancient glory. Farewell even to the Scottish name, see famed in Marshall's story. Now Sark rins over Solway sands, and Tweed runs to the ocean, to mark where England's province stands, such a parcel of rogues in a nation. What force or guile could not subdue, through many warlike ages, is wrought now by a coward few for hireling traitors' wages. The English steel we could disdain, secure in a valor's station, but English gold has been our bane, such a parcel of rogues in a nation. Oh, would or I had seen the day that treason thus could sell us. My odd gray head had lean in clay, we Bruce and loyal Wallace. But pith and power till my last hour, I'll make this declaration, were bought and sold for English gold, such a parcel of rogues in a nation. Robbie Burns.
Hi, my name is Roman. I'm calling from Vancouver, British Columbia. I understand that I can order Bob's tapes by calling this number. If that's the case, I'd like them. I don't know what the financial arrangement is. Perhaps J. Bob Dobbs can call back. I'm at area code 604, telephone number 25. We reach through the Department of Communication, Simon Fraser University, Burnaby, British Columbia. And the postal code, I do not know. Awfully sorry about that. Thanks a lot. The name is Roman again. It's about J. Bob Dobbs tapes. Till later. Bye-bye.
What happened to you? What do you got to tell us?
Oh, man.
Now back to our local television series for the end of the world. As always, we love it and we'll forever cherish it.
Hi, this is Dick Von Bond, and I'm here at the Guitar Awards of the Universe. We have our first contestant here. His name is, what's your name, sir?
Jim Tetnis.
Jim Tetnis. And where are you from, Jim?
I'm from the band of Lockjaws.
Oh, yeah. How long you guys been at it?
About 2 months.
2 months, right on. Yeah. You guys getting tight?
Hopefully.
Right on. So you're here to win all the money in the big guitar playoff. And how long you been playing guitar?
Oh, about 1 month.
1 month, right on. That's great. Okay, well, we're going to fire you off here, give you your cue, and away we go. On the scores from that, Jim. And our next contestant here. What's your name, sir?
J.R. Bob Dobbs.
Okay, well, we're going to let you go, Rick.
J.R. Bob Dobbs!
This is Dr. W.A. Swift.
Facing budget crisis. Mikhail Gorbachev says
the Russian Republic's decision to slash its contribution to the national budget could lead to the destruction of not only the economy, but the entire Union. Gorbachev yesterday denounced the giant Russian Republic's legislators for deciding to slash its contribution to the 1991 Soviet central budget by $202 billion. The key here is at the top, in a small caption, Russia cuts 202B. That's 22 bob. And another little piece on the same page from Morning TO. He says, life, consider the alternative. Marshall McLuhan. Further proof that Bob has infiltrated all levels of Toronto, even the sun. Bye.
Sorry.
Hi, Ray here. Here's a little piece on dimensions of radionics, Bob. New techniques of instrumented distance healing. Section 5, other dimensions. Today, nobody can occupy a fixed position or find a fixed or stationary target. Electric technology excludes both possibilities. Most people can still remember the time when fixed positions and fixed targets were taken for granted. The establishment is still a 19th century affair, entirely related to such assumptions. Our social and political and educational arrangements still assume goals and objectives as normal possibilities and aspirations. In fact, however, a young doctor is as obsolete on the day he graduates as is any engineer. Both have spent years acquiring long packaged information data while living in a total field world of information mosaics that are moving at high speed. Marshall McLuhan. I think Bob Ray owes us a big debt, Bob. Bye-bye.
The Beehive, Mike? We're in the Beehive. Okay, Mike. That was Ray Ray. We haven't heard from him in 4 or 5 months.
It's been a long time.
Yeah, listen, it's going to be one hell of a year, Mike. It's 1991. It's Bob's number, 19 both ways. And you realize it's 22 weeks after the invasion of Kuwait on August 2nd. 22 weeks later, on January 9th, which is 1 and 9, January the 1st. First month, 19, they have the Doomsday Summit. We now know that Bob's predictions are going to come true, and we welcome the class, the auditors of the Beehive audience tonight, auditing Bob's seminar, and in a minute we'll play the CBC predictions that I laid out on, I had to record
which,
it. And
which everyone missed.
Except for Dublin and a relative who fortunately taped it. But, Mike, I want to congratulate you. That was our strategy. There was incredible intrigue, unbelievable intrigue from the 19th till December 31st. Mike did a fine job the week before saying I was on January 1st. The CBC Pink staff did not want me on. Thanks to Brent Bambury. He fooled them all. He said January 1st. They didn't expect it. He did his own little New Year's Eve special. Mike told them the next day it was still on January 1st. They didn't even realize it.
Well, I learned to generate hype from the best, didn't I?
Yeah, you know how to do it.
We should explain perhaps to some of our listeners who don't quite understand. We are actually doing one of the very first reverse simulcasts, I think, in history.
A narrow cast.
We're broadcasting to the Beehive Club, I assume, tonight in honor of Jerry Belanger's release of the Dove CD, which is gaining notoriety, I understand.
Yeah, Jerry had a fantastic interview on CFNY today, so Bob was broadcast all over the globe on CFNY's Anik satellite hookup, and anybody could pick it up anywhere on the planet and off the planet, up there in the solar system.
So, you know, we were excited a few weeks ago about reaching out to people across Canada. Now we're going to be getting calls from every point of the globe. And that excites us, doesn't it?
Plus, we expect calls from the Beehive right after the predictions address, right?
If not during.
Bob's address to the nation.
Speaking of which, should we go right into the address?
Let me just see if there's any other preamble. One thing, when you go see The Godfather, it was Doug Nicholson, Bob's understudy, who pointed out last month that Laura Palmer was murdered just after the February 22nd, 1990 party she had that night. And we had that party here. We broke into heaven. It was an awesome broadcast. We discovered new levels of echo replay, echo perception, echo interpenetration. Well, if you go see Godfather 3, it begins with Michael Corleone writing a letter to his friends and relatives dated February 22nd, 1979, 11 years before Laura Palmer and on Bob's birthday, February 22nd. Also in the Godfather 3, the debt that Corleone tries to correct for the Vatican is $769 million. 7 is 6 is 13 and 9 is 22. There's a 22 code. And the whole movie revolves around Connie making her move to take over. Right? If you have seen it, you know what I mean. Anyways, congrats to Mike for playing the dummy front on the CBC broadcast. It was taped December 3rd. And we pulled it off. I taped it December 3rd.
Oh, right.
I had to lay it out a month before everything that's happened has happened. And so I know Dublin heard it. He reported something about it to you, but it was probably distorted analysis. Let's get the pure version. Are you got anything else to say, Mike?
That's it.
They're waiting to hear
the
address.
Been waiting to hear.
The beginning of Bob's entrance into 1991 on the first day, January 1st. It was broadcast just after New Year's.
Right. And to our regular listening audience and to those in the Beehive Club who are listening, you're listening to CKLN FM 88.1, the Church of the Subgenius Show. And Bob, you have
one point. To a sign of the intrigue that went on between the 19th and getting a broadcast on December 31st into January 1st, one member of the Secret Council of Ten, Johannes Turnin-Taxis, died at the age of 64, and his cohort, Amon Hammer, died the same week. That was the intrigue going on to prevent this broadcast.
Okay,
Mike.
Shall we go to it?
Yeah.
Yo, this is Bob Dobbs, discarnate leader of the Canadian Church of the Subgenius. I have been asked to make an address to Canadians on this, the first day of 1991. Mr. and Mrs. Mulroney, listen up. As a result of this broadcast, you will be forced to vacate 24 Suffolk Drive by September 1991. How could this happen, you ask? Well, let me elaborate. The Canadian Subgenius is perhaps the most interesting subgenius on this planet, but the Canadian Pink is certainly the dullest, the dumbest, and the most arrogant pink in the world today. However, as my reign as the true legislator of our time permeates the Canadian climate over the next 2 years, even the Canadian Pink will be forced to adapt. Because CBC has made the mistake of broadcasting me today, the homeopathic effect will be irreversible. The symptoms will first appear as an overwhelming disgust with Mr. Mulroney's GST and other taxation policies. Over the next 6 months, the probability of a taxpayer's revolt against first property taxes, then personal taxes, will be very high. Why? Because there is a growing belief among Canadian Pinks that Ottawa is not listening, that they are being treated as fools, and that they are being lied to. The GST shock will mean 20 times the previous price for most products. It will bring interest rates to 14.5% by May or June 1991. 7 to 8.5% inflation across the second and third quarters of 1991. Unemployment will rise to between 12% and 14%. The Canadian dollar will go down in value to the 75 to 80 cent mark against the U.S. dollar. But even this will not solve Canada's trade problem. These GST surprises from the local grocery checkout counter to the national level will cause much unrest as the classic signs of a depression become more immediate. So much so, miracle of miracles, the Canadian Pink will move, get off its butt, and you, Mr. Mulroney, will be faced with numerous busloads of these creatures arriving at your doorstep in Ottawa. Your days will be numbered, and you will not survive a vote of confidence in mid-1991. Yes, even your loyal MPs will break rank, and your government, praise me, will collapse. Believe it or not, this will happen. Then, a considerably fractionalized coalition government will be formed with representatives from the NDP, the Liberals, the Conservatives, the Reform Party, and the Quebec Parliament around the nominal figurehead of Jean Chrétien. Can you, Mila, see this coming? You know it is, and you will atone. Meanwhile, my fellow subgeniuses will be basking in the slack, ignoring the headlines, fully prepared as that which must come to pass comes to pass. Having purchased a good sweater in anticipation of our freezing cold winter, the subgenius will be ready as the shooting begins in the Persian Gulf during the third week of January 1991. And over 10 million East Europeans and Russians fled into Western Europe. And local wars and nationalism spring up around the globe as old scores are settled. You will be tempted to become very paranoid. But I have anticipated all this, and under my Tetradic guidance, the world will move away from a nuclear war remarkably, and the subgeniuses will have their day in court. Meanwhile, back in Canada, by 1992, there will be a completely new landscape. Canada will have broken up into four regions. The strongest bloc, we could call Pacifica, and will consist of Oregon, the state of Washington, British Columbia, the Yukon, Alaska, and Alberta. Quebec will have its own currency, and bankruptcies will have increased 40% in Ontario by 1992. However, the subgenius will be celebrating because my predictions and projections will have been the most accurate autopsy. And as a result, the Canadian Pink will be forced to acknowledge my hegemony in slack and will agree to back off. In 1993, a new type of leader following Bob's style will appear across the globe, one who will lead rather than dictate. In 1994, it will be proven that the Exodus have landed. And by 1995, a kind of equilibrium will be established, and the most astounding advances in knowledge and technology will begin to rapidly manifest thanks to cold fusion and injections of homeopathic remedies into acupuncture points, both of which are already here and have been replicated. Perhaps by then, Brian, you and Mila will have been forgiven. But that's another day. For now, you have to face the music. Two postscripts. One, Mordecai Richler will repent for having written a disrespectful article on Mae Brussels and German Skolnick for Playboy magazine in 1975. And two, there will be constructed this year an outboard memory box with no moving parts, stuffed with 1 gigabyte. That's 1 billion bytes of flash memory connected to a 32-bit channel into the memory slot that will not lose data when the power is turned off. And this will be available from Compaq or IBM by the end of 1991. And so, this is Bob Dobbs declaring to my fellow Slack masters, thank you very much and good luck.
Isn't it amazing what the Globe and Mail leave out in their year-end roundup? That was J.R. Bob Dobbs of the Church of the Subgenius, and you're listening to Brave New Waves on CBC Stereo, the CBC Stereo Network, formerly a tool of the left-wing counter-capitalist movement, but now a mere cog in the homeopathic revolution of the Church of the Subgenius. Praise Bob. Now more music from Big Pink.
Okay.
Instant conversion there with Brent again.
Yeah.
The 2 for 2.
In no time now, you'll be on the air, I think, almost every week.
Yeah, we might have to go through, we won't have to go through Bob Mackowitz anymore. We'll have that satellite hookup via CBC. Is there any calls? Are you ready to address us?
You've got a call. Do you want to talk about anything else prior to going to the phone?
I just want to say that I had nothing to do with that music.
ridiculous I was music. Ask you about the music.
Yeah, we got to find out who did that, and of course, they'll be relieved of their duties. Okay, so. Otherwise, I'm happy with the broadcast. I think it sounded relatively serious and a touch of humor, right? A little bit of garlic on the side.
Well done. Let's go to our first call, the Church of the Subgenius Show. Hello.
Dobbs, this is Touche. What? Your address to the nation on CBC.
Not Touche. What? You're not in here.
Your address to the nation on CBC is in direct violation of our secret agreement.
Touche, not you.
No more can I afford to, as a real member of the Council of Ten, to leak secret information to yourself for your masquerade.
Touche, you are the betrayer. So you are the betrayer.
You're an old hat, people. You still need words when I talk to you.
Not me, Touche.
From now on, you'll report to Bob Neverick. Why did you do it, Bob? You're washed up.
I want to see who was betraying me and turning taxes on the secret council. Hammer and taxes are dead. So was you, Tom Touche. I can't believe it. I can't believe you, my closest colleague.
I'm the one who tipped off Mr. Wheeler.
What? Back in 68? What did you mean when he saw me with the hood on with me and Connie in the cottage back in 68? You used to negotiate. You did that.
You're That's right. This is the countdown. It's so appropriate you show up before January 15th on the Doomsday Summit anniversary. January 9th. Yes, you.
You never should have sided with taxes and pulled the rug. You're hunting with the hounds and running with the hare.
You are full of tiger cages and elephant traps.
You better watch over your shoulder, Dobbs.
I knew something would happen if I did all this. Incredible.
What was that all about?
Well, that's a shock. It's a revelation. Tom Touche is a character, my assistant on the Secret Council 10. Might like my butler, and I was wondering who killed. I mean, only someone within the Secret Council 10 could kill, turn in taxes and Arm and Hammer. And so I thought, something will come up. This is the synchronicity. This is the parallel structure of the imminent war. The shooting starts in the third week. So we knew we'd have to have the battle within the Secret Council 10. And it, lo and behold, it's my butler. Can you believe that? Tom Touche. Tom Touche has been the hidden ground and pulling the strings to create my success so he could pull the rug out now. On to the next caller.
Okay.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hi.
Yeah, who's this?
Hello.
Is this the student, the auditor, the interloper at the...
This is the auditor at the Beehive.
What do you make of our seminar?
Bouncing back at the Beehive. Your presence was felt. Your voice was pretty inaudible.
Why? Why?
Possibly Touché's
work. What?
Possibly the noise level in here, the body count is slightly high.
Maybe we'll get Kent. You know, what can we do? I mean, you guys just have to have listened to the tape later, right? The archives. Anyways, much wisdom was dispensed, and I guess you should have been home, not at the Beehive.
That's a possibility, Bob.
I have a question.
The financial situation was rectified here tonight at the Beehive.
That means James B. and Dante are getting along now?
That's a possibility.
Yes, I hear Milli Vanilli Iced Tea, the band that everybody loves to hate, that
yes.
takes for granted but manages to manage, they're coming up soon.
Yes, Milli Vanilli Iced Tea will be on at the Beehive within a few minutes.
Despite the objections of James B.
Despite the objections of James B., who has left the Beehive, he has left his own home turf.
Elvis has left the building and Beehive. Mr. B. has left too, right?
Yeah.
So what do you make of the pattern recognition you've explored in the first 10 minutes of our discarded sharing?
Well, like I said, Bob, it's pretty inaudible, but your presence was felt. The karma is pretty light here. It's a nice glow. And I guess I would just like to say thank you for appearing tonight at the Beehive. And we look forward to a year of drastic change due to Bob's incredible, whatever you might want to call it.
Yeah, it's unclassifiable. Just stop kicking sand in my face, okay?
Okay, Bob.
Congratulations.
Thanks, Bobby. Death of Vinyl.
Death of Vinyl. A military operation with a soft approach, right?
Yeah.
Software.
Everybody at the Beehive is now going to say goodbye to Bob, and we're going to go straight to Milli Vanilli Iced Tea Rex.
I do want to thank the great Bob Scott for his wonderful portrayal of me in the Now magazine, a wonderful profile, nowhere near the J.R. Bob Dobbs of Dallas, which we welcome.
Yeah, it bobs around.
Thank you.
Okay.
What comes around, goes around. What goes around, comes around.
Okay, so we'll say goodbye now from the Beehive. Goodbye, everybody.
22 weeks after this summit.
Everybody will now say goodbye to Bob. Goodbye, Bob. Goodbye, Bob.
I think it doesn't sound like I'm actually being bright. I'm more of Tom Touche's trickery. We have another call?
Yes, we do. Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, baby. Bobby. February 22nd, 1975, The Godfather. Mike's, did the Beehive screw up our phone system?
don't know.
Is there anybody there? Is it a silent Jim Tetness again? I just want to say I love that message, Jim Tetness and Bob Dobbs Guitar Wars. I'd like to replay that sometime. It was a very pleasant and a heartwarming attempt at humor by our fellow subgeniuses out there in Scarborough, whoever they're associated with. Maybe they're Sean's buddies. I don't know. Where do you work, Sean? Are the world's biggest bookstore? What's the place you work at?
Kohl's.
Kohl's, yeah. It might be the Kohl's boys. Okay.
I don't think the Kohl's there. Hello? No, we lost it.
Okay, we're ready to go into topics, or are there more callers?
More topics.
Okay. We don't have to worry about the beehive. They've cut us off. Milli Vanilli and Iced Tea. Milli Vanilli Iced Tea Rex is playing right there now. We got somebody. Go ahead. Go ahead, caller. That's Ray doing radionics. That's Ray Ray. That's Ray Ray's radionics. We haven't heard from Ray Ray in 6 months.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, it's Tim.
Hey.
Yeah, Tim Hoff.
Tim Hoff, right.
Yeah. Were you the one to ask me about the AIDS prediction?
No.
No, that was someone else. Similar voice.
Yeah.
Okay.
I wanted some more information on the conspiracy to wipe socialism off the map and to Christianize the world involving the... I think certain members of the National Security Council in the U.S.
Well, first, are you a socialist yourself?
Yes.
Yes, so you're having an identity crisis? You see the imminent end of your system?
Well, I see it being discredited by the conspiracy.
What is the conspiracy? There are two kinds, top-down and bottom-up. Which one would you like to be...
Well, top-down, I guess, is the obvious one.
Well, no. See, the top-down plays catch-up with the bottom-up effects. It's always the case. The socialism was wiped out by television because... You don't believe that?
Reagan and Thatcher.
No, not the content. The medium itself, the tactile mesh, it bypassed the kinetic movie mosaic of the radio era. In other words, Churchill, Hitler, Stalin, Mao... Roosevelt, Oliver Cromwell, Bobby Burns, all these characters ran around in the early part of the 20th century, products of the radio. Now, fascism and socialism were byproducts through cultural distortion of the same effect of the radio environment. Now, TV brings in what we call the new left or the new right, right? New left had its turn in the 60s, new right in the 80s. Neither are effective in the long run. Decentralization means you're free. You don't need any external sort of... governmental force to control your situation. Now you're free. Of course, that means everybody else is free to run amok over you. So you got to be rather paranoid. And that's why you study the top-down information to see who's running what and pulling the strings so that you can be free without getting injections from viral chemical warfare.
Chemical as in the war on the Gulf.
Yeah, the Gulf crisis. You know, I mean, most of the executives running the show today are golfers, right? And so George Bush and them do many of their negotiations in the golf courses, and it's very appropriate we call it the Gulf crisis, because I tell you, it ain't happening in the Persian Gulf. G-U-L-F. It's happening in G-O-L-F.
Bob is good.
We have to pay.
So, Tim, let's take you seriously, Tim. You are a an early subscriber this past few months to the data, and it would be shocking to not understand why what I said is true. So this, why would socialism be erased off the map? Because there was a conspiracy set up by Reinhard Gehlen, Nazi Network, explained in the Torbett document, that killed off all those with a heart, with a sense of fellow traveler spirit, from JFK, RFK, Martin Luther King, and probably a few people in Britain and China and everywhere else.
Bob,
they all were
good.
Killed off, and it was literally a hijacking.
I say it was more of a sort of the organization of the G7 in the early 80s to inflict voodoo economics on all the
I see that basically you did not know socialism was wiping off the map until the Berlin Wall went down. So we've got to deal with some very elementary topics here. Okay, the reason the wall went down and the reason socialism has been given a bad name is up for grabs. Any reason you want. There's just too many of them. You know what I mean? Which one would you prefer that would make you feel comfortable and maybe feel that socialism would be retrieved eventually? You want to have some hope and hope your system comes back with archetypal intensity. So what reason would you prefer?
I'm not sure, but I know that, for example, that the Soviet Union and the United States engaged in psychic warfare, and the CIA and the Pentagon actually spent a lot of money researching secret projects to defeating the Soviet Union through some sort of superstitious methods involving
yellow set
ESP, something about a time warp over the North Pole, and other such things.
Yeah, that's all true.
Yeah, I know. Well, it was on Gene Petty in early October.
What, that topic?
Yeah, that topic is by a guy named James Mills, who wrote Panic in the Needle Park.
Yeah, I know that.
And he's developed this rather wild theory.
Well, he's accurate as far as it goes.
I just find it horrific to believe that the CIA and the Pentagon would actually take this seriously and spend money on this. That these people are running the world, are running the free world, and actually are sincere about trying to defeat a mythical enemy. I don't see much difference between capitalism and communism myself.
No, there's no difference.
Yeah, no.
They're both byproducts of the, newspaper era, say, 1830 and before.
Right.
First phase of the Industrial Revolution. Just they're filtered through cultural bias. That's the point. But we're living in a world of mythic stage now, where you take your mythic social pattern and run amok. You play hardball with it. You don't dialogue. You hardball it, is the phrase. So the capitalists were able to hardball the electric autonomy mood that rose in the 80s under satellite VCR remote control conditions, the cocoon of electric software addiction that most people are involved in, and McLuhan predicted as a larger effect. That just created a sense of no community on the movie level, on the world out there, the outer trip of kinetic space. You know, in the old days, our parents used to tell us, you guys got to get ready for the world out there. Well, the world out there is the outer trip of the movie medium. They're just talking about the effects of the movie. They didn't see the interplay of all the archetypes, the media archetypes. But TV reigns now. We're in the post-TV age, and TV wrecked socialism. We're now in the post-TV age, so the pinks now can implement legislative-wise and governmentally structure-wise the effects of the TV age, as obsolete as they are. So socialism will come back in the form of communalism. In other words, little groups, little guerrilla commandos.
So it's sounding suspiciously like communism to the sort of the far right in the United States, who are undoubtedly paranoid of anything that smacks of anything red or liberal.
You know why?
I'm not sure. I mean, I don't quite understand that.
Well, the Western world is based on the individualist archetype. And a community, a group of tribal sharing is the opposite form of social organization that the individualist who goes out to be home and goes out to be alone and goes home to be social. You can't handle a world where you go out to be social and go home to be alone. So this paranoia of these archetypes and iconic images and sort of societal structures, which the postmodernists are very inadequate at explaining, these things cause paranoia in the individualists as we move into a discarnate, software, incredibly imploded erogenous zone. Where can the individual archetype find room other than to hardball it and make it up as a myth?
Well, apparently the Soviets had actually built a mind control machine that used electromagnetic, kinetic energy, whatever, to kind of subconsciously influence people's brainwaves. And actually, the CIA and the Pentagon had actually had this machine in their possession through some sort of, I don't know how they got it, but
I think
it had
Tom
some kind of weird effect on people like, Richard Nixon, Jimmy Carter, and stuff like that. And they experienced temporary, almost psychotic symptoms of just bizarre activity and inexplicable behavior.
Yes, but their kids and their communities experience the same psychic paranoia and confusion, disorientation, just through the electric environment that was bombarding them from the 60s till the 80s. So you're talking about very minute characters, the political appendages of the mixed media archetypal interplay, such as Carter or any individualist kind of image you want to wake up.
At least Carter had brains compared to Reagan.
Are you sure?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm just...
Yeah, see, you don't know. And then that's a myth you bought into. I mean, you're talking a very mighty assumption here that you're using in your own thought processes.
I think that he definitely got screwed by the Pentagon. I mean, back in the late 70s, whatever, you could see it on his face.
Yeah, okay, look, the kind of technology that guy was talking about on Dini Petty or whatever show was, he's approximating what was being used in the battle on the solar government level. Remember, the real power structure, that's why I say the golfers are not fighting in the Gulf. The golfers are fighting with their satellites on the solar structure level, the solar system, the solar government level. So to deal with images like Carter, Reagan, these popular cultural anthropomorphic figures is to miss the game. But it's nice to have someone come out and apply the incredible technology that's been used by the Secret Council 10 to create confusion among their enemies. And that's what you're referring to. But don't think it in terms of earthly power structures. It's off the planet, that level.
Well, you mean the X's have control of it?
No, not the X's. I'm saying the use of electromagnetic ESP is almost like retrieval of old astral plane battles on the psychic level. These things that you just went through an inventory of are the kinds of things that work on the solar government level, and you don't hear that kind of fantastic information too often in the regular media. So you don't try to relate the solar government battles back to the archetypal battle between socialism and capitalism.
Well, the differences between those two, as far as I'm concerned, is cosmetic, and the effects are the same, as far as I'm concerned.
Right, and that's why they could be erased. I mean, capitalism didn't win. I mean, Bush is collapsing, too, as much as the Soviet Union and Britain and Canada. And note who isn't collapsing, Germany and Japan. Why?
Because they lost World War II.
Yeah. There's no way of succeeding other than through failure. That's true. You stoop to conquer.
That's right. I guess so. I don't know. I mean, I'm a little...
You now know. To take this percept, and you now know. Now go from there. Don't run back into your confusion. You
very
know
Bob.
Something. Thank you. A conversion right there.
I think we've reached the end of that discussion.
Was that feedback we were getting, or was someone blowing their horn? You know, wait, not right now, but the previous caller.
It was someone playing.
Yeah, I like
you've
that.
You've never heard that sound before.
Yeah, and then you talked to him, and I couldn't hear it, but I thought you were telling him feedback. Why that? It was music. Okay. Clean up.
You're listening to CKLM 88.1, the first show of 1991, Church of the Subgenius.
It's going to be one hell of a year. We could see that. Just probably within 12 months, I'll be... Mike will be sitting in the journal, Barbara from Frumpy Lane and interviewing me, explaining the mess we're in, right?
You have an apology to make. You have an apology to make on this line.
Okay.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Is this Dante or James B?
No, it's somewhat connected.
Okay, you're not a Zionist.
No.
Good. We honor to them.
Listen, I don't want to appear too vain, but it wasn't great Bob Scott who did that drawing of you.
Oh, that's what I was told.
It was me.
Oh, and you?
I'm Bruce Scott, one of Bob's spiritual brothers.
Really? Not relative, related blood-wise?
No.
Are you in any of
his... Just name-wise.
Are you in any of his bands?
No.
Well, you work with James B.?
Occasionally, yeah. So, certainly, I do the advertisement. I just wanted you to know. I didn't want you to have false information.
Well, it's great, Bruce Scott.
Yes.
So the person that told me heard the name Scott and thought it was Great Bob Scott.
It was a mix up.
I didn't think Great Bob could drum. I mean, could draw. He can drum, but he can't draw.
He's a wonderful artist, actually.
Oh, sure. Now you're covering up for me. Or maybe you are him. Listen, when Bob Marshall was down at the Beehive on December 1st or something around that time to get his award, he reported back to me, and man, James and Great Bob Scott, they're just in it for the groupies. After the show, they were just hanging around with these drunken blondes. It was unbelievable. talk about bringing you back to 40s.
Well, I met Bob there that night as well.
Yeah, you saw him drunk. You know, you saw him. You know, he's only in it for the beer, and you know what?
I know.
And so, but I was surprised that a guy of such decadent tendencies could draw a perfect illustration of me coming to the radio, but you've corrected my delusion.
Mm-hmm.
It couldn't have been him.
It was you.
Well, Bruce, don't forget to read the September issue, 1990, of this magazine and read the article. I mean, see a picture of me and Connie. You'll be impressed. I'm 68 years old, and you'll see what I look like.
Well, you didn't sound at all like yourself on the CBC broadcast.
Oh, no, that's another part of Bob Dobbs. That's the serious Bob, the Secret Council 10. I mean, you know, you've never heard me talk about employment figures or just a bunch of nonsense, right? But when they tell me I emerge with the medium, play off the particular medium of CBC, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, my one parting question, because I have to go back to work, is...
Where are you working?
I work at home.
Are you drawing another...
I'm doing artwork, yes.
You want to make any album covers?
No. Do I? Yeah, sure.
Okay.
I just wanted to say that one of my favorite television programs is Room 222.
Yeah, 20 years ago.
And it's back on the TV now.
Yep, it's
back on the TV.
Yeah.
At 2:30.
Mm-hmm. Very, very late at night.
Yeah, if only it could start at 2:22 or something.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
The prints are horrible, too. It's all this
black
rain and
doesn't make any difference.
Pubic hair is caught in the projector. It's awful.
So what masters of media ecology think that we need that replayed?
It's a wonderful program.
Right, because there's a number 22 in it.
Exactly. Twice.
And do you realize it's 22 weeks since August 2nd when Saddam invaded Kuwait, apparently?
Yeah, right, apparently.
They waited 22 weeks to have their summit. It's unbelievable. I mean, that tells you something. It tells you I'm not making it up.
Mm-hmm.
The cycles of history are based on these numbers, 19 and 22.
Mm-hmm. Well, unfortunately, none of them figure that prominently in my life, as far as I've figured out, except for watching Room 222.
What's your address? Where do you live?
Well, 592.
592? That's 14. Well, you're part of the new pattern. 14's a new number coming out.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, good heavens.
Yeah, and you got 9 and 2. You got the 11 in there. You got half of 22. How about your phone number? Give me the last four digits.
3298.
17-5 is 22. 3-2 is 5, and 7 is 12. What? Do it again.
3-2-9-8.
Yeah, 9-8 is 17, right?
Uh-huh.
And 3 is 20, and 2 is 22. You are 22.
Oh, you're kidding.
Unbelievable.
I feel like I'm a president.
Yeah, you are.
That's marvelous.
Okay, your case closed.
Okay, yeah, say some wonderful things. I'm listening to you.
Okay.
Okay,
thanks.
Bye.
Kreskin, yeah. Kreskin is, in Seattle at a commune, Mike.
A feedback again.
We'll see, wasn't someone playing it? We got another caller?
No.
Okay, so, yes, I was saying that Kreskin...
Maybe, just to interrupt. One of our guests tonight...
Oh, yes.
...probably doesn't know a lot about... This 22 business, and it's come up a lot this evening. Maybe we should just give a brief.
We got the man to explain it. Sean here. Speak loud, Sean. You tell him. I'm tired. I'm taking a break. Yeah, talk loud. Lean towards a bit.
No, I'm not going to explain it for you.
How about you, Mike? What do we say? The 22, when you become more and more involved, the less you know. We're so involved in the 22 pattern, we can't remember why it showed up. It's just that... let me see. When Bob Marshall, my colleague, worked for Marshall McLuhan, he had to organize McLuhan's archives for his widow when she wanted to sell it to an American university or Canadian government, some institution, whatever, depending on the price. And Bob Marshall was going through the files, and he found that box. There were 60 boxes of files. Box 22 had Bob Marshall's file in it as... archivist, chief archivist for Marshall McLuhan. And he noticed that, 22. Then he realized he lived at a street, on a street with the house number 22. Then he noticed his phone number added up to 22. Then he noticed 22 showed up all over the place in the news. So he kept this quiet for a couple of years, and then he ran into me again, and I told him why it happened. But that level, I don't know if I can explain it. I'm just explaining the first level, 22. Once you're told about it, like now, you will see it everywhere. But I'll warn you, you will move into a side effect of the number 18, which will start showing up, which is represents British intelligence, which is where you're from, right? This is the mic we're sitting here as a guest here. 18 surfaces for like a derivation or a replay or
the distortion of the 22 of the 23 effect that William Burroughs talks about and Robert Anton Wilson used as a political football. 5 from 23 is 18. So this 23 factor comes out of Europe. 22 is a Rockefeller number,
basically. And fascism, socialism is 18, fascism is 22. Now I'm remembering it. Yeah. So in 1922, when Ulysses came out, and when Mussolini took over Italy, he set up a fascist structure in the government made up of 22 departments. And many assassinations and Secret Council 10 activities happen on the 22nd. That's why we're very likely to see the shooting start in the Gulf War on January 22nd. All right? We can watch for that. But there's a new pattern happening. Besides the European impact of 23 and 18, which is a subsidiary of the 22, which was dominant since 1945 because Rockefeller and the American group were running the planet. As Rockefeller went down in the late 70s, early 80s, 22 surfaced because it was obsolete. It was quite visible. It was almost like a desperate communication by the Rockefeller faction through the media for symbolic measurement. But 18 was showing up here and there on the side. You'll note 18 flows around Frank Zappa, who's more popular in Europe than here. Now, what's surfacing now is the number 14. And my theory is, at this point, I'm still trying to figure out why 14 is showing up, but it looks like 18 and 22 represent the Atlantean consciousness, which permeates out of the Atlantic Ocean and through North America and Europe. So it's fragmented, the Atlantean. They played hardball compared to the Lemurians. The Lemurians came out of the Pacific Ocean. Now, we're moving into a softer zone here. The Pacific vibe seems to be 14 versus the Atlantean or Atlantic vibe of 22. And it's not fragmented. It's actually 1-4, so it's the tetrad of 4 with the 1. You know, unity plus tetradic diversity. I rest my case, Mike. You got to talk loud, man. Come on. Between the 1 and the 4. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you're right. We got a caller. Get me out of this.
We have a couple of callers, yes. So you got yourself out of that one.
Yeah.
Hello, CKLM.
Hello.
Oh, boy, Laura.
Laura?
Yes. Hello.
Yeah?
You're on.
I'm on? Okay. This is Diane. I'm not Laura.
Oh, great.
not Laura Palmer.
My friend Dylan Jay suggested that I call. I'm also a full-time associate of Lyndon LaRouche.
Oh, we love to hear from Lyndon LaRouche. Lyndon LaRouche is one of the greatest minds of our century. He and Marshall McLuhan are the greatest poets since 1945. And I welcome any calls from the Holy Offices.
Well, great. So,
and so give us some propaganda. Give us some stuff from the LaRouche world. Tell them about the geometric golden section, the comb heads, you know, all that stuff.
Well, look, first
life at the airport.
There's some actually bad news from the States. Three of our associates yesterday were convicted by a jury in Virginia and were given sentences of 40 years, 41 years, and 46 years.
Is it the Gallaghers?
Yeah. You know about them.
Yeah, I know. I work with LaRouche.
Oh, yeah?
I do, yeah. My colleague Bob Marshall did the greatest interview with him. You should try to get a hold of that sometime. And it's a two-hour interview. But, I work in the Secret Council 10, and I work for and with 10 holy offices, one of them being Lyndon LaRouche, the Holy Office of Logic and Dialectics.
Yeah?
And so why are you working in the LaRouche office and just that office?
What do you mean, just that office?
Well, there's other styles of archetypal information, like Marshall McLuhan, Herbert W. Armstrong, Mae Brussel. You know Mae Brussel?
No.
Oh, okay. How about Garrett Dean in Nova Scotia or Cosmic Awareness, the Medium?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, let's go back to your propaganda then.
All right. Well, look. So the war is on, as you said.
Oh, yeah.
And we've got to move. We have to get LaRouche out of jail.
That's right. We got to make him president fast. Now, how are we going to do
this? Where were you?
Well, I don't know, but one thing that's happening this Saturday that I want anyone who's listening should be there. There is a demonstration at the U.S. Embassy in Toronto.
Yeah, great.
At 2:00.
And we will be there.
Okay, and I will be there too. The other thing is,
do you know that
where were you?
Bob Marshall used to broadcast Lyndon LaRouche EIR information on CKLN, but he was prevented from doing that after a while. You know, Lyndon LaRouche is not welcome on this station. Do you know why?
No. Well, I mean, I can imagine, but why don't you?
Tell me your imagination. Why do you imagine?
But by you personally, or?
No, I have no say in the CKLM programming. But why would you think Lynn LaRouche is not welcome with that kind of information in Toronto?
Because it's the truth.
That's right. It's the truth.
Yeah, Hollinger and Conrad Black.
Oh, yeah. You know, Tom Touche works with the Hollinger Corporation. If you heard him earlier on the show.
Yeah.
Got 10 Toronto Street. That's where you should have a demonstration also.
Absolutely. I'm for it. We've been distributing our newspapers there. You know,
right in front of 10 Toronto Street?
Yeah.
Note that, subgenius. Go down there and get some of the New Federalists. It's the best newspaper around.
Where were you on November 27th?
No, you can't believe such warm acceptance coming
in. No, I can't believe it. Normally, as soon as you say LaRouche, they cut you off the air.
Yeah, but we don't hear. I promote LaRouche all the time. I suffer incredibly, but...
yeah, I'm sure you do. I'm surprised you're still allowed on the air.
Where were you?
Listen, it's great to have a woman calling from LaRouche Fragmentation because... LaRouche is considered a male chauvinist, you know, the last guy.
Yeah.
And I know I've met the most intelligent women in the world, LaRouche organization.
Where were you?
I'm very proud of LaRouche women. They're very balanced. They understand what's happening.
Yeah. Where were you?
All right, so here,
let
me give you our phone number in Toronto.
Right.
It's 516-3466.
516-3466.
Yeah.
I hope the 3 sixes don't mean anything. Gorby's forehead.
Yeah, right. Well, I saw them on the Queen's forehead on the $2 bill the other day.
Where were you?
Oh, so that was 516-3466.
Where were you on November
22nd?
Diane.
So, are you a Canadian?
I am a guest.
November 22nd.
You are a Canadian.
No.
You're an American.
Yes.
See, it's not hard to get Canadian members, is it?
No, actually, we get more Canadians than anyone else for some reason.
Not more than Americans.
Well, no, but we recruit better in Canada.
November 22nd.
When did that start?
For a long time. I'm not sure why.
Where were you on November 22nd?
Yeah, what you mean is you recruit and they become loyal members.
Where were you
yes.
on
yes.
November 22nd?
Well,
it's a means of getting the green card, probably. Right? You want to go to the state? Okay, Laura, we got to go to a couple other holy offices.
Okay, thanks.
I hope you call back sometime.
I will.
We'll see you on, what day is that demonstration?
Saturday, Saturday, 2 p.m.
Yeah, just before the end.
That's right.
It's serious.
Okay.
Here is a bulletin. Thank you.
Okay.
Oh boy, we're getting regular calls.
Another LaRouche.
Lynn LaRouche, you know, I just love celebrating the right in everybody's face here.
We've got, it's a busy night for phones. This is Keith, he's clipping along here. Hello, CKLM.
Hello, Bob. This is Vladimir.
Vladimir, Noah, yeah.
Yes. I just want to say you forgot to mention the Kabbalistic meaning of the number 22.
Oh, give it to us.
Okay, the Hebrew alphabet, the mystical Hebrew alphabet, not the everyday spoken one, has 22 letters and in a flowery description. If you were to pronounce the alphabet, you would basically sing the beginning and the end of the universe, of the whole universe. So when you come to the 22nd letter, that would be the ending of the universe. Alpha, Omega, you know.
So 22 is the last word.
Yeah, 22 is the very last stage of the universe.
So since I'm the last word... And I don't have to use words to tell this to you, right?
Yeah.
I'm the last word in the most comprehensive way, because the word
November
makes the market. 22nd. Then, therefore, 22 would revolve around me.
Yeah.
I think that would be, if you just help explain this to Mike here.
Okay.
Mike, our guest from Britain.
Yeah. Oh, really? Oh, hi, Mike.
Where were you on November 22nd, 1963?
Oh, he said thank you. So, Noah, did you recover from my private conversation with you about a month ago?
I did, and I was just going to say I came to Canada in 1977. Who need it?
You came where?
I came to Canada in 1977.
Really?
Another 7.
Yeah, that 7-7 is 14.
Yeah.
That's when I came here.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Okay, well, that's all I want to say about the 22.
Okay, thanks, Noah.
Bye.
Bye.
It appears as
though something has happened in the motorcade booth. That was played on CFNY today, the Death of Vinyl CD, and many people love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, Sucking Chestnut, which is now very worried.
No, that's not Sucking Chestnut.
Oh, what's that?
The Sucking Chestnut is the Who Shall the Pope.
That's right, yeah. But I just want to tell you that both this guy, what's his name in the art? Spiz or something?
Spurial Jizz or something.
Spurial Jizz. These guys, that guy and Sucking Chestnut are very worried with the high profile this CD is giving them because they stole all this stuff. You know what I mean? It's not authorized. So.
It's coming up to 1 o'clock. We've got another hour left in the show. And the number's here, just to remind you, 595-1655 or 595-1478. Hello.
Hi, Mike.
Hi. Hi, Heather.
Heather. She understands, for Diane, the LaRouche caller, Heather is a very good expert mentally on the concepts of, what is his name? I forget. Back in the 19th century, you mentioned during fundraising.
Oh, George Cantor.
George Cantor.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Diane, Heather here, get in touch with her. She's interested in the Cantor world, which was a big influence on LaRouche. George Cantor, the mathematician, was a profound influence on LaRouche. Now, Heather, you prefer, bottom-up analysis, I know that. And I want to thank you for defending me against Mike, who's sitting on my right here at the little dinner party you had on January 1st while you suffered through Brent Bambury's awful choice of music, waiting for my address, and it didn't happen, right?
It didn't happen. And hi, Mike. Mike from England.
Yeah. Go. Yeah. He's a wonderful person.
The electric baby.
Yes. David Lynch predicted you. So go ahead.
Well, speaking of golf, and Mike will appreciate this.
Yeah.
Mike knows about this already. The episode in Twin Peaks where Leland Palmer dies by smashing his head against the steel door. The Church of the Septuagint symbol of the bleeding head of Arnold Palmer. Just, I couldn't help but notice a coincidence with the bleeding head of Leland Palmer. And yeah. Leland Palmer was obsessive with practicing his golf.
And right, he always buried everybody in the golf bag.
Oh, this is great.
He took the body out in the golf bag.
Yeah, right.
And he almost clubbed Agent Cooper when he just, I guess the week before he got caught. Remember they were out and they stopped him for speeding?
Yeah.
Or moving around on the highway? And he pulled out a club and he was going to smack Cooper over the head with it, but Cooper turned around just in time. So, Heather, I think that's a profound perception. Yes, the subgenius motif is there.
So what is it about golf?
Well, didn't you hear my earlier explanation?
No, I tuned in kind of late. I just caught the tail end of you talking about the golf crisis.
Yeah, that G-O-L-F.
Yeah,
the golf crisis is the old form of pink managers in the Secret Council of Ten who communicate their most profound secrets on the golf course. You know, that's where they can commune with people from other countries, other corporations, without too much surveillance, on the golf course, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're having a crisis. The world government is obsolete now, so they're trying to implement it. So it's called the golfer crisis, or the golf crisis. And then, on top of that, you've got Twin Peaks miming this incredible violence by the old pink establishment, and therefore they would use subgenius motifs like Bob and Mike and the bleeding head of Arnold Palmer, which you pointed out.
So are golfers individualists?
Yes, they're the old form of individualists. They're merged, they're P.O.B.s, print-oriented bastards. You know, the pink Bob, pub, right? You know, the British version go to the pub, you know.
Oh, yeah, I also wanted to, we were trying to decide how to explain a dupe to Mike. I think you should describe a dupe for all of us.
Jeez, Mike's a dupe. We have, in our new cassettes, we have listed CKLN dupe, Mike Dyer. So Mike Dyer has...
No, I didn't mean that, Mike. I meant Mike from England.
Oh, I know, but I'm just... we call Mike a dupe. Mike Dyer is a dupe. Basically, a dupe is a useful fool. In other words, No, really, let me explain. Money is obsolete. And money is the poor man's credit card, okay? It's been that way since the 30s. You see, the oligarchs, the British oligarchs, in the 20s, when the owners gave up the system and the managers took over, they had to explain that money had no basis anymore. So they realized money was a symptom of the fact that the medium is a message, that money as a medium is a message. So they gave it to everybody. It was called the New Deal in America. Unemployment insurance. You know, the whole welfare state, all right?
Mm-hmm.
So those that believe in visual space or the money as a reality are dupes. And usually they come out of the lower classes or the middle class, and they move up in the, according to the Peters principle, to their highest level of incompetence, right? The appropriate level of incompetence, managing visual space, which doesn't exist. They are useful fools or bureaucrats. Okay, so they're dupes of the oligarchs who don't use visual space and is always communicated through acoustic space.
And so how does that make Mike a dupe?
Because we have a dialectic here. We have me, who involves everybody. I'm Bob. I'm everybody. I contain multitudes, right, in the discarnate state. We have to have a knowable level of the discarnate state by using words. So I have to have a person who believes in English language will use it when you bark it at him. And Mike barks it back
man.
To me. A what?
A straight man.
Yeah, a straight man who uses English language. So if I say the English language, he'll think I'm talking to him. And he'll respond. And I can use that as a red herring while I communicate discarnately. So Heather, you have a great knack of pushing the percepts, you know, beyond what I've said before.
Oh, that's good.
So anything more you want to say?
Not really.
Why not? Come on. You know, you guys can have multiple orgasms. Come on.
Oh, let me just think.
Yeah, let's just rest for a second.
I don't want to waste airtime while I come up with something.
Okay, we'll call back.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Okay, I'm still on the call.
Boy, what a show, eh, Mike? We won't forget Mike. Mike has to give his rebuttal, right?
Yes, absolutely.
The other Mike.
Hello.
Yes, I'm driving around in my taxi. I've heard your show before. My name is Mark.
Yes.
And I'm just a little curious about Lyndon LaRouche. I heard that girl call in saying a few people had got some pretty stiff sentencing today, 40 years and plus and so on.
40 years?
Yeah, 40? Is that what I heard?
Yeah, 40, 46. They sentence them way beyond what's decent. They gave another woman, her name's Asher, they gave her like 76 years. 86 years, can you believe that?
Well, what was the, didn't they break into some government offices? I'm not up on Mr. LaRouche.
Oh, yeah, you certainly are. LaRouche never did anything. He's one of the nicest people, the most moral people of the 20th century, just because he inspires dupes or useful fools to run around in airports and harass others is not LaRouche's fault. The guy made great breakthroughs in the intellectual territory and the conceptual space, and his effects he's not totally responsible for, but generally they are infiltrated and harassed considerably because his concepts are very powerful on the useful dupe level.
Okay, let me get you to play the devil's advocate. What are some of the bad things about Mr. Rivers?
He doesn't understand Marshall McLuhan or too many of the other holy offices. He doesn't have complete comprehensive awareness, which I'm the only person who has, so I wouldn't knock him for not having that. Nobody else on the planet has it.
Bob is good.
But you can develop it if you stay regular in your taxi cab.
Well,
what's the license plate number? I'll see if you use it 22.
I never look at the license plate number.
What's your last, what's the first little four, what's your address?
What's my address?
What's the number?
I use a post box. I don't trust
anybody.
What is
it? What's the number?
The first three digits?
All the digits of your post box.
1324.
That's 4 and 2 is, well, you got 2 there. 3 take away 1 is 2. 2, 2, 4. I mean, you're a 22, baby. A 22 cabbie. Thanks
well,
a lot.
Well, there's a little bit more to life than that, isn't there, don't you think?
Not much.
Not much?
No, there's no life before death anymore.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway,
okay, go
have
back.
A good one.
So, wait a minute. Wait, you're asking me, all that stuff you hear about the LaRouche people, what they did, they're done by infiltrators. Think of a traitor, they rip off people's credit cards. It's not done by the genuine LaRouches who we just heard a sample from, Dear Diane, we just heard earlier. These people. Now, you read the book, The Rise of American Fascism. You still there, Cabby?
Yeah, I'm still here.
You read Dennis King's book, The Rise of Lyndon LaRouche and The Rise of American Fascism. That will tell you some of the tricky areas that LaRouche had to communicate with while moving into deep levels of power. You can't avoid the mafia and the Nazi network when you work that way. But Dennis King, an old socialist and a Maoist, tried to blackball LaRouche by saying these relationships that LaRouche had were a smear on his character. It's just that LaRouche infiltrated so deeply he had to deal with those people. And I bet you Diane didn't even know that.
Well, whenever you're dealing with information that's trying to be covered up, I mean, there's always somebody going to take a shot at you.
Yeah, you
and,
know that.
How many people know the name of George Bush's oil company? I'll give them a hint. It's the Twin Towers of the Pendula Tower in Houston.
Yeah, it's Zapata.
That's right.
Yeah, Zapata.
And guess what? One of the execs from there lives in Toronto. As a matter of fact, he lives downtown.
Well, again, Toronto is one of the most evil places in the world. It's the center for the solar government structure. That's why the LaRouche people are protesting at 10 Toronto Street.
When are they protesting?
Saturday.
This is coming 30?
Yeah, Saturday.
And at what time?
Did you get a time, Mike? I don't know, go down there and start it yourself or show up, continue it if they've left, you know, just improvise on it. Saturday is when they got the permit, you know?
Yeah, but what's at 10th Toronto Street?
That's the Hollinger Corporation.
Oh, they're still there, yeah.
Argus, you
yes,
know, sir. Argus.
Mr. Black and all the rest. Yes, Mr. Black.
Yeah, where be Iron players. Hand, you know, Long John
yes,
Silver.
Yes,
remember
yes.
that?
Yeah, they have a lot of power. They have over... Well, last I read, a couple of years ago, they had control of 125 corporations in Canada.
Yeah, 122.
122. Yeah. Well, there you go. That's the 22
yeah.
again.
Yeah. So the point is that Canada has, if you go to the Washington airport, the airline attendants there will tell you that the biggest traffic between Washington and any other city is between Washington and Toronto. Washington and Toronto are very heavily involved, and we call it the Bolshevik-controlled North America.
Mm-hmm.
Toronto is a key agent for that area. It's a very bad place here.
Well, I know. I drive taxi at night. I used to drive full time.
And you see it.
Oh, I see it all the time.
The corruption.
Yes, I know a lot about it. The Metro Relations Commission, which is a crown corporation of Metro Toronto, they gave themselves a little raise last year, and the rumors are that the raises were almost double.
The first cabbie, I believe, isn't it?
Yeah, with the 22.
Yeah.
See, you can add up and you can subtract. You can work whatever with whatever numbers you got. You can manipulate them.
Okay.
You don't change them. You just work with them.
Okay. Lots of calls. They're lining up tonight.
Great.
First show of 1991, Church of the Subgenius. Hello.
You know, so we got a call from the Department of Communications there, you know, Simon Fraser. So I knew that guy was going to hang up, so I was going to fill in air.
Okay.
Did you notice that Roman guy calling from the Department of Communications
yeah.
making the phone message? That's significant. They're going to start. He wants to use my tapes in his class. See, the confusion spreads.
Hello, Sikala.
Hey, it's Phil in air.
Yeah, you're Noah's friend.
David.
Yeah. Hey, is it okay that I said your name last show?
That's not, well, we can pretend it's not my real name. That'd be better.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah. Okay, Dave.
Yeah.
Did you check in the Garrett Dean story and Edmund over at Noah's?
No, I think it's too far back in the past for us now.
Okay.
But Jim Tetnas.
You did that?
My buddy, yeah.
No, not Noah.
Listen,
that was one of the funniest messages that Connie ever got. Now, are you saying, what is the symbolism in that message? What are you telling me? That Bob overplays, plays too loud, plays too long? What's the meaning of
you
it?
You got to make that yourself. See, I don't know. That was pure, they were just on drugs and making it up as they went along.
And who told them to call me?
I did that myself. That was a slightly edited version of the Guitar Wars of the Universe.
Well, you mean they did it, you taped them, and then you played it.
They sent me the tape, and I, yeah. Exactly.
All right, great. Well, very good work, David.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Dick Von Bond.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, that was the guy who called you and told you about when he was 5 years old. He read you that story.
Oh, the backwards stuff?
The backwards stuff.
Yeah.
That was him.
And he claimed that we misinterpreted, and we claimed he lied.
Yeah, it was a frightening little call. But
yeah, it was breaking new territory
in
terms of the lie. The big lie was showing up, right?
Yeah, it was intense. It was the father-son dialectic.
Yeah. Okay, next topic.
Yes. Speech.
Speak that I may see you.
Now, speech, when it comes along, it creates, it makes ESP the ground, and body gesture the ground.
Yes.
But it doesn't, do they become fully understood or not?
What do you mean by understood?
Well, you were sort of saying that when a media obsolesces another, it makes that one more observable.
It becomes an art form. It becomes a yearning, a structure for aesthetic value. So therefore, as visual space started to surface as the real ground, then the figure of ESP, which in your terms is a ground, that's really confusing, but
okay,
the
way
you said it becomes hoiked up as a value.
Today at the U.S. Embassy on University Avenue at 2 p.m.
Yeah, the 202. Get that 22 in there.
Yeah, okay.
So you heard the cabbie.
Yeah, I heard the cabbie.
And you agree with my explanation of the harassment of Rouge and the
Accepting. You know what? Dennis King's book is funded by the CIA.
That's right.
And
yes.
And if people want to know about LaRouche, they should read his autobiography, The Power of Reason.
Yeah, very good book.
Yeah.
And what do you think, Helga? Can she handle her solitude?
Yeah, she's doing great. She's stronger than most.
She didn't take on any lovers or anything.
No.
She's pretty devoted to Lynn.
What?
She's very devoted to Lynn.
Well, yeah, absolutely, and the ideas.
Did you speak to her in Chicago?
No.
Design.
Okay.
I didn't.
She's running for president of Germany or something.
No, she was running for parliament, but the elections are over.
Right. Well, the Green Party collapsed, so now the LaRouche people can come in and fill the void, right?
Well, who knows?
Well, let me tell you, if you read LaRouche's analysis of the effects of fusion technology and the technological imperative are very profound, and he is right about how we need technological spin-off to create the new breakthrough.
Yes.
The new world order.
Well, just world order, not Bush's new world order.
That's right. And the oligarchs, you know, are waking up equal fascism as a return to feudal dynamics.
Bob is good.
Right?
Yeah, it's population wars, genocide.
Yeah, genocide. You guys know everything.
I know.
Okay, this talk to you later.
Okay, bye.
Okay, I'm confused. Now, what does...
Oh, good.
What does Lyndon LaRouche and the U.S. Embassy have to do with... They're protesting against the recent sentences? Is that the idea of the protest?
No, they're protesting against the war. LaRouche is an anti-war movement leader. He's always been an anti-war. Uh-oh. They walk in like a bunch of thugs, right? Okay, you looking for stuff? We got another caller?
Yeah, got another caller.
Just some thugs walked in. Don't worry.
We owe them some money. Hello?
Bob, this is the electrified voice of
Street. Western armies invade. Western rulers exploit and condescend. Tourists and missionaries and businessmen flock to the Arab lands and transform the Arab institutions. Big and little wars drench the Middle East in blood. World powers play chess with the Arab principalities. And somehow the Arab in the street always ends up on the bottom. Follow my series, this thing that I'm reading, this advertisement. Follow my series and you'll understand better the Arab's rage, his wounded pride, and his long frustration. Such understanding, da-da-da-da. Now, Mike, who wrote that?
Frank Zappa?
It was written by Life magazine in 1969, 22 years ago. Can you believe that? This is
an ad in Life magazine.
This is an ad in probably some journalist medium because it's an ad to subscribe to Life. So it wouldn't be in Life, Tom. It'd be in another medium, right? Or maybe it's in Life. Okay, it's an ad.
One or the other.
Yeah, it's an ad for Life magazine. And you wouldn't have believed that. So what does this mean? Tom, tell us.
Well, it basically means that if literate newsmen and military bureaucrats pulled out of Iraq, we could communicate with the tribal Arab and his non-visual culture quite easily.
Yeah, and because...
A point of view, Bob, is meaningless in the electric age. And tribal people like the Arabs and teenagers don't have a point of view. That's what it means.
Yeah, and these stupid military bureaucrats went over there in the 50s and 60s and handed out pocket transistor radios to these Arabs and drove them further into paranoid tribal intensity.
And then wordsmiths from British intelligence and the U of T went over and tried to sell advertising to them.
Yes.
But, Bob, it definitely is true that we're in the post-chair age, which I think is a very, very important thing. But what I wanted to say...
Well, the chair is a fragmentation of human sensory life that has never replaced the cushion for a mat.
Absolutely.
For the Arabs. They don't use the chair.
That's right. And really, this is what you have here in this conflict. You have the men who sit on chairs versus men living in the post-chair age.
Yeah, Mr. Sputnik, the solar government astronaut image, sitting in a chair.
That's right.
The solar government.
That's right. But when you put your eyes and ears and nerves, everybody, out on the planet, out on the satellites, that is, when you put your eyes and ears and nerves out on the satellites and you lease these places to stand to private corporations, you don't have any rights left anymore.
Well, Tom, you can stay on the air. After you said that, let's play Marshall McLuhan talking about Henry Kissinger. All right?
Go ahead.
You got that, Dave, Mike? We just stick it in. Side two. Yeah, that last little bit. Now, this is a one-time Marshall. Visualize him looking up in the sky, praying as he says this, when the journalist asks him about Kissinger, who is very agent for what Thomas just illustrated, the people who control our eyes and ears, right?
And the Kissinger death, he was a very big role player. The voice of Standard Oil. And in the guise of a big international diplomat. You know, one of the mystery men of all time. Why did you mention him, and what brought him to your mind?
I was thinking of the balance of politics that you reach for, which you know. Well, I think of our political rather than a living
country. Okay. That last bit is not relevant. If you see the videotape where Marshall said that, you see him quizzically asking this interviewer why he brought up Kissinger, a very key point. Marshall calls the Kissinger the trigger man between the four worlds, and he was quite relieved that the questioner didn't seem to be probing him on the level that Marshall could become paranoid about. Right, Tom?
That's right.
Yeah, now the thing you're saying there, okay, here is a man who got the Order of Canada, all right? It's like a Life magazine, this statement from Marshall McLuhan. He's talking about Kissinger, who his associates would use Marshall McLuhan's information. He's talking about Kissinger as the voice of Standard Oil, definite top-down analysis, and disguised as an international diplomat. That's like this Life magazine interview, Life magazine advertisement, where you're putting out a kind of the truth, the top-down truth, as entertainment. Or what is it, entertainment, or is it a reverse probe?
Reverse probe.
Yeah, it's stooping to conquer. In other words, you're involving yourself with the old kind of point of view, an alienated, cynical point of view. You absorb that in your ad. You include that position. So the ad maker, the wordsmith, doesn't have a point of view. Marshall would talk to Kissinger, even though he called him the Kissinger of death, the kiss of death, right? He would relate to him. It's like LaRouche has to relate to the Mafia and the Galen Nazi network. When you're involved in an imploded zone, you can't use value judgments. That's something, I'm not going to go any more on that.
Well, let me just pick it up.
Yeah.
Because I just wanted to say this, that I just wanted to sort of get back to, just briefly, this whole point. It's so important is about the fact that as a collective body, our eyes and ears and nerves are out there on the satellites. We have leased these places to stand to private corporations, private operators and manipulators who don't give a hoot about people, don't give a hoot about ecology. And this is like turning over the mother tongue to a private corporation, or, as McLuhan said, like handing outer space to NASA. Or like giving the atmosphere to a private corporation, and you're going to get a bill at the end of the month saying you've had so many inhales and exhales, and you owe us so much money. What sort of rights do we have?
Yeah, that's why we shouldn't talk about rights.
That's right.
What should we talk about? We should.
Well, we shouldn't make predictions. Because predictions are based on point of view and only...
No, I'm talking strategy. What's the strategy that we can protest without falling into the trap of the obsolete issues? How can we protest?
Well, I think the way to protest is to shut them off.
Yeah, in other words, we refuse to buy the Toronto Star, refuse to do the CBC.
It's not the newspapers.
No, it's the Electric Environment.
It's CNN.
Yeah, well, that's the main point, but you've got to do it locally. Mulroney is on the right track by taking the budget away from CBC. Now, he will use some part of that medium to keep himself as content. We now must ask him to turn off the media coverage of him.
I just think one way of looking at it is, look, we have these, we've made our eyes and ears and nerves collective instruments. As McLuhan said, if you give me a long enough pole, Archimedes said, if you give me a long enough pole and a place to stand, I'll move the world. Today, he would say, I'll stand on your eyes, stand on your ears, stand on your nerves, and make the world turn in whatever tempo I choose. I think that we as a society have to get together and say, we're not going to let you stand on our eyes and ears and nerves. We're going to force you to hand over the control of the inputs to those collective eyes and ears and nerves to organizations and groups who will properly handle and manage it.
Yeah, a more sophisticated boycott.
Yeah, non-Peter Pan and non-Mother Goose executives.
That's right. The Secret Council, 10 people in my control. Now, I'm doing this. But yeah, the point is to get everybody to join in. So Media Ecology is the slogan. And what it is, it's not just private, say, boycotting of watching your own TV. It's demanding your politicians to deal with this one issue. It's become monomaniacal about media ecology, not about nature, oil, high prices. Whatever issue is normally filtered in the content of news, right?
Right.
You have to ignore everything. And we can massively educate the public to engage in that sloganeering if they understood the stakes. So we're right to be, you know, monomaniacal, narrow-minded fascists on this issue.
To the degree that it shakes them out of their old modes of thinking, it's a first-run strategy. But then after that happens, you then have to give them media ecology and have them go on a proper media diet.
Yeah. Now, that's what I'm talking to you
and that's
about.
That's what you're talking about on doing.
Now, Sean, did you
and
have
a good job at it, I may add.
Thank you. Well, I think...
Before I leave, I just want to make this one
point.
Hey,
here's a... Yeah,
go ahead.
You remember, I just thought of something. We're going through this area of tension for the next 2 years. It's programmed apocalypse, Armageddon over in the Gulf zone, right? Okay, so what we do is when it's over, we do not rebuild society, you know, in a somnambulist state. We only rebuild very carefully and ecologically. So we use this breakdown as breakthrough. That's why we have the media fast in 1992. That's why I could take over in 93, 94. In that period, we'll use a very careful coverage of the recovery itself. We will demand no coverage of the recovery.
That's right. That way we won't be numb.
Yeah. In other words, we'll accept the breakdown. We'll take it as a positive.
Breakdown is breakthrough.
Yeah,
it's a positive thing.
We welcome this war.
Oh, absolutely. War is education.
That's right. War is education.
War and peace in the global village. One last.
And we have to bypass the concepts of war and peace because it's man versus his inventions. It's not war or peace. In peacetime, you have war, and in wartime, you have peace.
Yeah.
You can take it either way. So what were we going
to
say?
I just wanted to skip very quickly, because I know there's other callers.
Do you?
But I just wanted to say two things. One, I want to make a projection based on McLuhan.
Yeah, not a prediction.
Not a prediction. That's only for Weatherman today. It's like using the word progress.
Yes.
McLuhan noted that when a big power envelops a small power, the small power at once appears archetypal and heroic. It also feels and acts that way. And I think that you'll see the Iraqis in the appear to the West to be archetypal and heroic over the next number of months. And next year, Saddam Hussein may be Time's Great Man of the Year.
Okay, we'll take that projection, Tom.
And one other thing,
okay.
Bob, I don't know if you have the December 28th EIR. But it's just worth remembering this point. In 1973, the European NATO countries, and Italy in particular, found themselves in a strategic situation very similar to the present one. The U.S. administration, through Henry Kissinger, had demanded that they do their part in the Yom Kippur War between Israel and the Arab countries. Kissinger had asked the Italian government for the immediate use of military bases in order to resupply Israel, even if that would be understood by the Arab countries as an act of hostility. Contrary to today's situation, 17 years ago, the Italian foreign minister had the guts to say no. He was Aldo Moro, the statesman who was kidnapped and killed by the Red Brigades 5 years later, after having been threatened in no uncertain terms by the trigger men of the first, second, third, and fourth worlds, Henry A. Kissinger. The mystery man, Bob, of all time.
The mystery man of all time. They're trying to say that Hussein is a mystery man. No way. Henry Kissinger is the mystery man of all time. Thank you, Tom, and I say good luck.
And that includes you too, Bob.
Good
night.
Good night, Tom. Okay, we've got less than half an hour left. We've actually got just over 20 minutes and
okay,
lots of phone calls. So let's keep it brief.
Take
do you want to have
call
any...
Well, if you've got callers, I guess they take priority. But Mike here might want to say something, if you want to bring him in. Do you have anything to say?
Well, I was just thinking about
Twin Peaks, and well, we're talking about Kissinger. Bob, the mystery man. I noticed that if you watch Twin Peaks in black and white, it actually becomes quite abstract, because a lot of the color actually creates the images. Especially, I noticed there's a signal light, which I didn't understand.
He
does have a cover. He does present an industrial program, which the LaRouches support. But the problem is that industrial program is hijacked within the software world, which he doesn't understand. So he's a bad guy for not understanding what I told him before, all right? But he's pitiful, because he's being he's having sand kicked in his face by worse people.
Right. So he wants to be like the 98-pound weakling who gets the Charles Atlas...
Yeah.
Program, and then
he got it with the little pocket radios.
That's right, and he wants to kick sand back.
Yeah.
At the big guy.
Yeah.
The
and he didn't realize that he was already dead. He's fighting in the old terms, and as Heather and I discovered collectively just a minute ago, we got to do it with media ecology. That's how you fight back.
Right.
He's content. And he got duped.
Right.
It's sad. He's going to get nailed.
Is he figure or ground?
He's figure.
Figure. Right. Okay, good.
But the figure becomes ground very quickly under electric conditions, and that'd probably take another show to explain that.
Great. Bob, one quick question just then. I've just come back from a sabbatical of media ecology. How do we know when to turn back on?
Use your psychic ability.
Great.
That's the only use for psychism. All right?
Okay, Bob.
Thank you.
Praise Bob.
Thank you.
I'm converted again.
Again. Bye. You've regained touch with Bob? You're back in touch?
Cut him on.
Oh, so, well, great, whoever you were, you're back in touch. Is problem solved?
Saved. You're on CKLM.
All right.
88.1, the phone is still ringing. We only have 10 minutes, so a couple of calls, I guess.
Yeah, some more calls.
Got, how long for the team tonight?
5 minutes.
5 minutes,
yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so in fact, you've got 5 minutes.
Tonight. Yeah, we've got 5 minutes left.
Okay. Hello, CKLM.
As below, so above, Bob.
Is this Ray Ray?
Yeah,
right. Where have you been?
I was just going to say, there is no religion higher than truth, and this is the highest and lowest show I've ever experienced.
Well, Ray, I couldn't play your message. I'll play it in 2 weeks, the one that was just too long for the beehive, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
The one, whatever. Oh, yeah, your Madame Blavatsky. We'll play that next week.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Even though ERA has called Blavatsky a hashish-addicted devil worshiper, we can still groove on her.
Yeah, so you're saying that this show has been a breakdown and breakthrough at the same time for you.
Oh, always.
Yeah, but where have you been? Have you been listening for 3 months?
Yes, Bob. My body has been experiencing the side effects of antibiotics. I let myself fall prey to my dentist's advice.
Yeah.
To the regimen of penicillin, didn't take my acidophilus or my yogurt culture, as some of us would know it by.
This is several months ago.
Yeah, I've been experiencing various breakdowns from antibiotic side effects. I just like that as a warning to people who have been indulging in antibiotics that they can create really strange side effects.
Yeah, you should go see Connie. That's the candida zone.
Well, I believe that I've never really contracted candida because my diet has been so pure, but actually it was my flora that went out of balance. I have been dealing with it naturopathically, which I'm sure that Connie is aware of and is in tune with, rebuilding the flora. And I'm coming along now. Coming back to normal again.
Well, Ray, I was away during the election, but when I came back, I don't know if you heard the show, I did point out that you and I created the ground. The Bob Ray dialogues of this summer, when we went through the chakras, created the ground for the rise of Bob Ray, right? Did you hear us talk about that?
I remember you acknowledging it, and I'm surprised no one seemed to notice at the time.
Where were you? Well,
the subgenius noticed it. A lot of people noticed it.
Where were you?
I think Bob's going to notice, and where were you? As I say, he owes us a debt.
Bob Ray.
One of the things I was going to mention to my friend Noah
Where were you
earlier on?
22nd.
Is that one of the obvious effects of 22 being a solar run universe?
Where were you
for us here
November
in the solar system? The sun is
where were you
working
November
on a 22-year cycle. So
this
what do you know?
There it is. You got it. We're inside a 22. 22 what cycle?
22-year cycle.
What's it doing? 22 years. Go around.
Goes through a sunspot cycle every 22 years.
Okay,
it's
Ray.
Thanks
a lot,
the
Ray.
Entire cycle. It goes into a low and comes back to a peak.
Well, that's very important. Thanks, Ray. We gotta go, Ray.
Absolutely.
Talk to you next 2 weeks.
Hi.
Hope you're still alive, feeling better.
We've got time for one more call.
Okay, unless, what is it, 7 minutes to?
Okay, 7 minutes to, 8 minutes to.
These guys might want to say something. We'll take the call. It might be double.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
short call.
Hello?
Hello?
Okay.
Hello.
Yeah, you're on.
Bob?
Yes.
Hi.
You
My
sound familiar.
Well, I've called just once.
Yeah.
I'm a bit of a novice in the Church of the Subgenius, actually.
You're never a novice.
Well, I'd like to be a novice in it.
Yeah, we want to become a novice. Yeah, that's right. We're trying to become novice.
You?
I have my own. I'm from the Church of the Holy Mackerel. I call that once.
Yeah, well, I remember that. Yeah.
As a touristic caller, I'm not really a regular, but I was wondering, would you field any questions?
Yeah.
Any?
Yeah, any.
Well, where does transvestitism fit into media ecology or into the...
Now, that's... media ecology is punning, and transvestism is a visual pun. Mae West was good. Remember, she was impersonating a female impersonator.
Oh, is that so? I didn't know.
Yeah. So, punning is multiple level. Transvestitism is a natural response to the X-ray nature of the interplay of mixed corporate media.
She's the lady, I think you said, who's had a gun in your pocket, or are you just glad to see me?
Yeah.
She was a wit. Yeah.
Okay. I gotta go.
Oh,